This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
A rocket explodes over the Gulf of Mexico, launched from the great state of Texas. Meanwhile, people in Florida were woken up at 4:45 a.m. Whoops! An alarm alert test that woke us up on our cell phones. I had that alarm alert, and you can imagine with the way we do our show what that was like for me. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, thanks for hanging out with us. So I am concerned about tornadoes again, and the reason I'm concerned is because we have that weather that is hanging around the Midwest. You know, just the other day, the Cole, Oklahoma, 3 people confirmed dead. That small town, 600 people. And listen, Oklahomans, get this. You are a strong bunch of characters. There's no question about it. Beautiful area. Even, you know, smaller areas, suburban areas all over the state of Oklahoma. And just sad that this is what you got to constantly remind yourself that, yeah, there is weather that is hovering around, and it's hovering around now where you've got people that are right in the line of possible tornadoes, and then this is something that we live with, right? Especially when you live in Tornado Alley. So sad for the people there. There's a lot of damage. We've seen way too many tornadoes. You know, when you hit that 500 mark, so close, in 2023 already, and there's so many reports of one touches down here and then one touches down there. It's a multiple tornadoes, but in Cole, they got a massive one, and that did some serious damage. There were people that were caught up and trapped inside homes or cars, and luckily lots of people were saved, but 3 people did not make it. Not happy when your cell phone goes off at 4:45, and why is that? Well, first thing is, when you hear an alarm, there's like sort of a panic, especially if you're in a dead sleep. And that happened. So it happened because the cell phones went off. It was a test of the emergency alert system and just said, no action is required. And I guess it was even scarier because, you know, if I have an iPhone, a lot of people have iPhones. But this was for Android users. They got what they saw was emergency alert, extreme, when they picked up their phones. So that's what they got in bold text. So what are you thinking? If I'm barely awake and I pick that up, yikes. So I didn't get that. It was the Florida Division of Emergency Management. They tweeted out, we know that a 4:45 wake-up call isn't ideal. And they said they wanted to apologize for the early morning text. And each morning they test the emergency alerts on a variety of platforms, and it was supposed to be on TV and not disturb anyone already sleeping. Whoops! Now, of course, what they did say is they're taking the appropriate action to ensure it will never happen again. You think someone gets fired over that? I don't know. That only true emergencies are sent as alerts in the middle of the night. And that's, again, what would be scary to somebody, because you know that instinctively, if you're getting that alert, it's got to be something serious. Or why would you get that in the middle of the night? SpaceX Starship launched from Texas, then exploded over the Gulf of Mexico. So they're saying that it was successful in the sense that it cleared a couple of hurdles, that, you know, they wanted to see the rocket's engines ignite, then they wanted to see clear the big tower, which it did, and that anything else that happened was just extra data for engineers to review. But there was this separation failure of 3 of the rocket's 33 Raptor engines that failed to ignite at liftoff. So it did clear the pad, which is a 500-foot launch tower, without any kind of a failure. But that's when the failures happened. So just after, or just right before the 3-minute mark, Starship and Super Heavy, that's the 2 components, would have separated, and the latter would have attempted a soft water landing. And then Starship would have continued to an altitude of about 150 miles before a soft water landing as well near Hawaii. But that did not happen. still Elon Musk says this is what we wanted to do. So this was a successful, in fact, trial for us based on what they're hoping to do in the future. But there was a lot, there were a lot of spectators, you know, that were watching this. A lot of people were watching the test. I mean, throngs of people. I shouldn't say throngs. There were a lot of people watching. It was 9:30 in the morning. And they didn't get what they thought they were going to get, but they certainly got a show. There was no question, about it. They saw it for sure. And it's when you see those trails and you start to think about it, you're like, oh, what happened here? What happened here? All right, Mike Lindell, the election denier, you know him, Mr. Pillow. He was offered $5 million if he could be proven wrong, and he was told to pay up. So the My Pillow founder claimed he had data showing Chinese interference, and he said he'd pay $5 million to anyone who could prove the material was not from the 2020 election. A computer scientist, I guess, is entitled to the prize. Cha-ching. That's what the arbitrators ruled anyway in that case. So, you know, there you go. Hey, coming up, we have a great show for you as we swing into yet another weekend. I can't believe how quickly, right? April is disappearing before our eyes. I mean, it feels like to me, I don't know about the rest of you, that we've sort of just jumped into April and now here we are at the tail end of it. Before you know it, we're bouncing into May and Mother's Day, and then, of course, a long weekend for many people because you'll have Memorial Day that's coming up, which is always exciting, right? So you may be planning for that. But in the meantime, I think, again, the plan for anybody listening to me in the Midwest, and I just, again, before I jumped on, was looking at some of those deadly tornadoes. Please, please be careful with that extreme weather, with all the tornadoes, the possibilities of it. You know, certainly we saw that there were 15 on Wednesday tornadoes. There was hail the size of tennis balls, and there were straight line winds, which are awful, that go all the way up to hurricane force, you know, 84 miles an hour in one county in Oklahoma. So homes get ripped up and roads get ripped up, and you got lots of shelters that have been set up, thank goodness. But what happens is you get this warm air, they call it a cap, and then when it's 3,000 feet above the ground, then you get those pockets of surface air, and you look at the rising and what it does, and it blossoms into storms. So then you start to get that rotation, and you get the supercells, and that's when it gets incredibly, incredibly scary. I really feel for I know some of these people are listening to us in Oklahoma. I really feel for the people, feel for them in coal. Just, you know, you look at the shattered lives. Human life is first, but then you got to pick up the pieces, and you have just dilapidated homes, walls. You have chairs that are ripped in half. I mean, can you even salvage really very much from that? And they try to salvage what they can, but boy, those deadly cone-shaped twisters that have become, in some cases, so large and so wide. And then you get this, what they call that debris ball that gets centered all over the place. And here it was centered over the community of Cole. So we're thinking about you. There's no question about that. Stay with us. Much more coming your way on the flip side.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, this is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and best-selling author on safety and preparedness. The fact is, things are getting downright scary for everyone who's storing their wealth in the banks. We just saw the collapse of three major banks, and I would urge you to consider protecting your wealth ASAP. If even a tiny percentage of Americans attempt to withdraw their savings, we would see a collapse of the entire banking system, sending us into a modern-day Great Depression. Fortunately, there is a way for you to avoid this. It starts with contacting Advantage Gold. If you have an IRA or 401k, Advantage Gold can help convert those paper assets into physical gold and silver. This is the process that I recommend everybody use as a hedge against rapid inflation and to protect your retirement wealth from the banks. Take control of your financial safety today. Call 800-900-8000 to get your free gold investment kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Do you have those well-meaning friends who tell you what you ought to be doing with your life? I'm Kate Delaney. I have them. Occasionally I listened and I found myself stuck in dead-end jobs, relationships, and a life I absolutely did not recognize. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, I promise you, once you finish it, you won't let people tell you what to do anymore. Learn how to make bold moves that change the course of your destiny. The book is filled with stories that will make you laugh out loud and lessons you can apply right away. If you go to my website, KateDelaneyRadio.com. I have a steal of a deal. Check this out. Just $29.99 for both my hard copy books. Deal Your Own Destiny, which I just talked about, and my girlfriend's gratitude journal. Perfect gift for girlfriends, wives, or any woman in your life. Again, both books, just $29.99. Click on special offer at KateDelaneyRadio.com.
In our virtual green room, he has had such an interesting career. He worked in publishing and advertising for over 40 plus years. So in that role, art director, graphic designer, illustrator, writer, what I think is really cool is his ties to the New York Times. He has a book, The New York Times Home Repair Almanac, and Tiling the Installation Handbook. I mean, how do you write for the New York Times in the home improvement area? I know growing up in that area, how critical people can be. So to write a column like that for the New York Times would be absolutely amazing. And he's written a novel that we're going to talk about called Werewolf on Madison Avenue. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So you got to tell us the New York Times story. How'd that happen?
Well, after I got out of the Air Force, I was a missile launch officer. I got into the art field, and I was doing illustration. And one of my clients was the New York Times, and I did technical illustration and scientific illustration. And I was illustrating the column for Home Improvement. And all of a sudden, the writer of the column took off. He resigned. He decided he didn't want to do the column, and the New York Times was looking for a writer. Well, when I was in college, I minored in English, so I stepped up to the plate and asked if I could do it because I had a background not only in illustration and art and writing, but I was also involved in the theater, and I was a stage carpenter at one time. So I figured I had enough background that I could do this, so they gave me the chance, and then the rest was history. I was able to do the column for 5 years. The only reason why I'm not doing it now is because the New York Times has gone on hard times, and they're no longer publishing independent columns like the Home Improvement, Chess, Photography, and Cooking, and so on.
Yeah, but that had to be a fun experience for you, was it?
It was a fun experience, and it was also a learning experience, because even though I had experience in home improvement and industrial carpentry, I realized that when you write about something, you have to be able to tell people how to do it. It's not enough to do it yourself. So all of a sudden, I found out myself I had to be not just a writer, but also a researcher. So putting together the columns was quite a task. It was enjoyable. But after 5 years, I felt as though we had done everything we could do, so it was just as well as the column terminated.
Yeah. And before we talk about your novel, where you have this really interesting character, Jeff Foxlove, you worked in advertising, so you know what the advertising industry was like and some of the crazy people who really were part of that. You worked on ad campaigns and whatnot. What was that experience like for you?
Well, to tell you the truth, I worked as a freelancer, and I did not work for the big agencies like J. Walter Thompson, Y&R, Doyle Dane, or BBD&O. I worked for a lot of the smaller agencies, and when you work for the smaller agencies, they have lesser products. They don't have the big-name products to work with. So they say these people sometimes got overzealous, and they actually kind of bend the rules of truth a little bit. I didn't work constantly with him. I would come in occasionally, and that gave me a chance to see the world of advertising from an outsider's perspective at the same time by being in it. And so I ran into some rather interesting characters whom I will not mention. But anyway, for obvious reasons. But anyway, so as I was writing the column for the New York Times, somehow I got the idea of thinking, if I ever sit down to write a novel, I would like to write about advertising, but I would like to put a glitch into it, a twist into it, a little wrinkle, and that was the werewolf idea. So even though I had an experience in advertising, I haven't known many werewolves in my time.
Neither have I. So talk about your book, Werewolf on Madison Avenue. Tell us about the story of Jeff Foxlove and what happens to him.
Well, if you think about the monsters, there are the five big monsters: Dracula, Frankenstein, the werewolf, Invisible Man, and the creature from the Black Lagoon. And all of them, except the werewolf, are full-time monsters. But the werewolf is unusual because he's only a monster one night of the year, one night of the month. That's the night of the full moon. So he can be a monster and also keep his day job. And that's really what this is about. Jeff Foxlove is a young man, he's just out of college, and he wants to get into advertising. And he's read The High-Minded End of Advertising from Ogilvy's book, The Confessions of an Advertising Man. And he really wants to get into to sell products and to do a good job. Unfortunately, he falls into a lesser advertising agency where the owner of the agency is also the creative director, and there's no bounds to his tastelessness. And so he takes Jeff Foxlove under his wing and makes him a raunchy copywriter. Well, it's all right for a while, but Jeff, on a vacation in the Yucatan, runs into the creature of the night and becomes a werewolf. And he comes back to New York thinking everything is okay again, but then he becomes the werewolf on the night of the full moon. And the next morning he's filled with remorse. He wants to give himself up. But his boss tells him, no, his boss doesn't want to lose a good copywriter. So he tells him, okay, I'll find a way to keep you from going out on the night of the full moon and becoming a predator. Not only does he do that, but he realizes that now that he's got a full-fledged werewolf on his hands, he can use the werewolf to advertise various products, shaving cream, hair, shampoo, and so on. It works for a while, except for one thing. The werewolf, by its very nature, must kill. And so we have to see. The story takes place, it goes on to say, can the werewolf survive as a werewolf and yet still be a copywriter? It goes to an ending, which I think the readers will find very surprising.
Ooh, so it's so interesting because you've combined lots of humor. You have such a great sense of humor. You can see it is certainly weaved in the book, and horror. And it had to be fun for you to write this, was it?
It was fun. It was fun exploring the character and combining the eccentricities of the advertising world with the predatory nature of a true monster and making them come together and then seeing if you could resolve this in a different kind of ending. I might say that I appreciate your comments, and I, of course, think the book is very good, but I'm not the only one. The Seattle Book Review just gave me a 5-star rating for the book, so it's getting good reviews.
Nice. Will you write another novel?
Yes, I'm in the process. I've just finished another novel called Visions of Destiny, and it's about a man who can see into the future, a very average, ordinary person, but he has the gift of getting glimpses into the future. Now, that might seem like a wonderful gift, but if we remember the mythological legend from Greek mythology of Cassandra, the prophetess of doom, sometimes it turns out badly, and this is the way it turns out for Henry Gainsborough. He has these visions, but when he reveals them, people become very wary and even afraid of him. And he goes through life in this way, and it has another bittersweet ending. The book is in the final editing stage now. I don't expect it to be actually in print until the middle of March.
Nice. Werewolf on Madison Avenue, you can pick that up on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And I would be remiss not to ask you about this, because the Natural History Museum in New York, I think, is one of the great gems in the United States. And you spend time volunteering there. I'm waiting for your dinosaur book to come out. What's that like?
That's a long wait. Yes, I was up at the museum yesterday. I work at the I'm a gallery explainer, and I'm up on the fourth floor, usually on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, sometimes Thursdays in the afternoon. And if you want to know anything about dinosaurs, you can come up and ask me. I won't be able to answer everything about dinosaurs, but I'm fairly fluent, and I've been doing that for over 20 years. But I'm not going to write a book about it. There's too many good books out there by too many authorities. So you'll have to wait for that, unless I can figure out a way of making a fiction book out of it.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. What made you decide to do that? Because obviously you were busy. You had your hands full with everything else you were doing. What made you decide you were going to volunteer, and you've done it now for decades?
Well, yes. What happened was I started as an artist, and I used to go up to the museum. It's a great place to draw the animals because they don't move. And then I felt out. I joined the museum so that I could go there anytime I wanted. And then I got the newsletter, and they were looking for volunteers and to explain dinosaurs. The dinosaurs hall had been closed for a few years where they were renovating it and reorganizing it. So they opened it up again, and they were looking for volunteers to explain dinosaurs. And I thought that might be interesting, just to volunteer to do something. I'm not very good at volunteering, like in a hospital or something like that. But it might be something to bring my talents, however limited they are, to useful purposes. And so that's what I did. I've been volunteering, and I've been doing it, and I really like it. The museum is a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Ed Lipinski, Werewolf on Madison Avenue, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's my pleasure, I assure you.
All right, so interesting his story. I really, really like the idea of what he did, as I go back to the book, Werewolf on Madison Avenue, of talking about werewolves and in the cutthroat world of advertising and combining that. There really is a lot of humor weaved in this, and his main character, Jeff Foxlove, is fascinating. So thanks to Ed for coming on the show and all of you for listening to this version of it.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
USA News Update. Prosecutors are reportedly set to drop manslaughter charges against Alec Baldwin in the onset death while filming the movie Rust. A statement from Baldwin's lawyer said they're pleased with the decision to dismiss the case against Alec. The film's cinematographer was accidentally killed by a prop gun that was held by Baldwin. The White House says House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's debt limit proposal would be a disaster.
Will they vote to kill manufacturing jobs in their own home districts and reverse the reshoring of manufacturing from China.
White House spokesperson Karine Jean-Pierre. A fourth suspect is in custody in connection with the mass shooting at a Sweet 16 birthday party in Alabama last weekend. 20-year-old Johnny Latron Brown faces four counts of reckless murder. The shooting in the small town of Dadeville killed four people, left nearly three dozen others injured. Dave Collins, USA News.
Honorary Forest Ranger Betty White here, lending a hand to my dear friend Smokey Bear, because for 75 years, he's only said,
only you can prevent wildfires.
But there's a lot more to say. Like, if you park your car on tall, dry grass, the hot exhaust pipe can start a wildfire. So be careful out there. Go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
I need help with my taxes. Where can I find free tax help?
If you make $54,000 a year or less, you can participate in the IRS Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, VITA, or the Tax Counseling for the Elderly, TCE, programs. IRS-certified volunteers provide free basic tax prep for low to moderate income taxpayers. The TCE program is specifically for taxpayers age 60 and older. Go to IRS.gov and enter free tax prep in the search box to find a VITA or TCE site near you.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Welcome to America Tonight, Lee Halverson. His book is called Cong Catchers, A Soldier's Memories of Vietnam. Boy, do we have a fascinating off-air conversation. His book is a long, interesting, amazing read. It will take you on quite a journey. There's no question about it. And his life, I think, has been that kind of a ride. Lee, thanks for hopping on with us.
You're welcome.
So in Vietnam, at Vietnam, you were a dog handler. But before we get to that and what that was like and what you had to do around the perimeters and some of the fascinating stories that happened and some of the things you and your men did to actually help some children in Vietnam and you cared about the people, before we go down that road, what was your road to going to Vietnam? Because you got married and then what happened?
Well, 2 weeks after we were married, I was sent to Vietnam. I'm not sure I'm answering your question.
Yeah, you are answering the question. So you're just married 2 weeks, and
yes,
you should be enjoying your honeymoon and whatnot, and then all of a sudden, boom, you go. And how did your wife feel about that? Ginny, how'd she feel?
Well, the high spot of that is we never had a single argument our first year of marriage. But as far as Jenny is concerned, she had just graduated from Iowa State with a degree in English and speech. She interviewed at least 20 schools to get a job, and her interviews went well. The school board hesitated in every case about hiring her because she was married to a soldier. And they figured when I got back from Vietnam, I would swoop her away and go elsewhere, and they would lose her as a teacher, and they wanted someone that would be in that position for a long time. So she couldn't get a job as a teacher, And she ended up living with her sister in Los Angeles and waiting tables until I got back from Vietnam.
Wow. So she's doing that. She's waiting. You're there. And when you get to Vietnam, what's that like for you in the role that you were playing? What was it like daily for you?
Oh, the daily operation, there's two things that have to be protected in a war zone. One is food and the other is ammunition. Most of we attack dog handlers were sent to either a food yard or a ammo dump. Some were sent to helicopter pads. And our job was to protect the interior of whatever we had been assigned to. Generally, there was a lot of concertina wire around every facility. And our job was if anybody got through the perimeter, then we were to put our dog on them, attack them.
Wow.
The dogs were really efficient. Drugs were a big problem in Vietnam. Many, many soldiers used drugs. And frequently, like at the ammo dump in Pleiku, that was guarded by 24 attack dogs. It was a huge, huge ammo dump. And the dopers would get together and have a pot party and not guard their given area. And those of us that didn't use drugs would periodically go through that post just because we knew somebody wasn't working it. And we had an occasion where there were four sappers. These are North Vietnamese soldiers with backpacks filled with plastic explosives. And if they get through, they throw the plastic explosives into the ammo dump and blow the whole thing up. And the dog handler caught four of them coming out of the last row of concertina wire. And his dog killed all four of them before any of them could throw a satchel charge into the ammo dump.
Wow.
That's how quick they were. Very efficient.
Yeah. No kidding. You told me a story, too, that was fascinating about a little boy who became sort of your secret weapon by telling you when there was going to be attacks. Tell the listeners a story about how you met him.
Sure. I was guarding a food yard. And again, my orders are anybody that comes through the concertina wire, I am to put the attack dog on whoever that is. It was dusk, just the sun had just gone down, and I saw this little boy, he was 8 years old, come through the last row of concertina wire, and he went directly to a garbage barrel, pulled out a rotten apple, and shoved the whole apple into his mouth, and just chewed and swallowed as fast as he could. And my orders were to attack that kid. Well, I couldn't do it, you know, I told you before, I'm a Christian, and one of the principles that I live by is Jesus Christ said to treat other people the way you'd want to be treated yourself. Well, I wouldn't want to be attacked if I was starving to death. My problem was if an officer had seen me not turn my dog loose on that boy, I could have been court-martialed. But I looked around, I didn't see anybody else. I knew enough Vietnamese that I spoke with the little boy and found out where he lived. And then I told him, you get out of here, don't you ever come back. And at the end of my duty time, I would take a loaf of bread or a can of peaches or something. And when we drove by that little boy's home, I'd just shove it out the side of the truck. And I did this for quite a while and never thought too much about it until one night the little boy showed up at my bunker, or at my barracks, and said, G.I., be in bunker at 8 o'clock tonight. And I didn't know exactly what to think, but at 8 o'clock we started getting rocketed. And from that point on, that little boy warned me of every single attack that was to come, and he knew it before our Army intelligence knew it. And very simply, I was taking care of him, and he was taking care of me.
Yeah. Wow, what a great story. And then, of course, there's a story. We're speaking to Lee Halverson, Kong Catchers, A Soldier's Memories of Vietnam. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, about the orphanage and how you had so many of your men eventually that helped you with the orphanage and what that was like. And that story came about because of these popcorn bombs and a baby crying, and that led you to creating these this orphanage. What happened there, and what was that like for you to see what it did to the men?
Well, when I took the baby to the orphanage had been damaged by mortar fire. And I when I married Jenny, I gave her my vow. I would be faithful to her. Now, most soldiers on a day off like to go downtown and get drunk and have some female companionship. And I didn't do that because I was going to be faithful to Jim. So on my time off, I went to the orphanage and started repairing it. I put in windows and fixed doors and siding and whatever it took. And one by one, the other guys in my company said, you know what? Dad, they called me Dad. I think my time would be better spent helping you at the orphanage than going downtown. And in time, most of my company all went to the orphanage on our time off. And all of these guys, it took one or two little kids that, in their mind, these are my kids. I remember one, his name was Arturo Wilhelmino Policelli. He's from the Bronx. He was a member of the Sicilian Army back home. He had to carry six knives on him, but old time. He picked a little boy that had been hit in the face with the palm. And the palm had burned off his ears, his nose, his lips, his eyelids. It made you want to vomit just to look at him. He was horribly, horribly harmed. And Art would hold that little boy and cradle him and hum a song. It was just beautiful.
Wow. Wow, so many stories like this in this fascinating book. What do you hope people take away from reading Kong Catchers?
Well, at least my experience so far in this is I have had wives of ex-Vietnam veterans call me crying and saying, you know, my husband wouldn't say a word about what happened to him in Vietnam. But I got this book and I read it and I read some of your stories to him, and now he's talking like a magpie. And we're closer now than we have ever been, and I just wanted to call you and thank you. And the other is I've had parents call me and say, I want my kid to read this book. I want him to, or her, to adopt the principles that you lived by. Would you come to our church and do a book signing? So I've been asked to go to quite a number of churches where I have done a book signing, answered people's questions. It's been a very enjoyable experience.
Yep, you're having an impact, I would say, Lee. And we're out of time. People have to go and get this book, and they'll hear more of these stories. But what a big heart, what a wonderful story. Lee, thank you.
You're more than welcome.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You too can order or get info about the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original pure Pau D'Arco and drink super tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original pure Pau D'Arco super tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
No matter where you live, what you make, or who you voted for, there are some things that will impact all of us soon. Whether you're concerned about the alarming increase in man-made disasters, financial institutions collapsing, or worsening food shortages, Americans are preparing in numbers not seen since World War II. What's changed is how we prepare. And the folks at My Patriot Supply have made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind, knowing you're ready for what's next. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on over a dozen emergency food kits. These include tasty breakfasts, lunches, dinners, drinks, fruits, veggies, meats, and snacks, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit per person. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. My Patriot Supply food kits are in stock and shipped discreetly. We've seen too many Americans let down by institutions we used to trust. It's time to rely on ourselves. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you, too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
On America Tonight, I'm pleased to take you to Australia for a conversation with Robert Phillips. He's written a book called 2100. He actually has another book out, too. We're going to briefly talk about that because that sounds just as fascinating to me as you fast forward into the future. So, Robert, thanks so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about why you wrote this book. You're an aviation risk analyst. You did that for a big chunk of your life. And obviously you had an interest in science fiction and things that are futuristic, and also in writing, because you know how to tell a really fine story. So how did that start?
Well, the storytelling started when I was about 4 or 5, writing stories, I think. But what inspired me with this one was wondering what society would be like in the future, and the process of writing was a long one. It went through quite a few revisions till eventually I settled on the book as it is now, set in 2100, and speculating on what life could be like at that time, the end of this century.
Yeah, and what do you think life is going to be like as you speculate about that?
Well, I'm working on philosophy, maybe something of an article will say. I believe that things never turn out quite as well as you hope, nor as badly as you fear. For example, with global warming and the danger of reaching a 2-degree tipping point, I'd say we'll get close to the 2-degree mark and we'll hover on the edge and just manage to avoid the catastrophic changes, although we'll still suffer serious problems. But I think along the way there'll be a price to be paid, and then I think the economy will eventually disintegrate and that people have to fall back on their own resources, or more particularly, involving themselves in the communities and pulling their resources to survive for some of that time. But I think what might eventually happen if they live in a community-oriented lifestyle for some years and realise there are certain psychological benefits in that is that even when better times return, they might elect to still stay with a community-oriented lifestyle, and that the prevailing ethos of society will have changed from maximising wealth to earning as much as you need, but otherwise concentrating on being part of your community or pursuing artistic or other pursuits. So it will become lifestyle-oriented.
Yeah, it's interesting because let's talk about your novel and that character, James Lawson, and what happens to him, and tell us a little bit about his journey.
Well, in many ways, he epitomizes the prevailing ethics of these days. Various reasons he wants to maximize his wealth. And initially, he's actually skeptical about climate change because it didn't fit in with his worldview of his economy getting bigger and better and so on, until he discovered he could make money out of dealing with it, in his case, by running an energy efficiency company and so on. And he became a believer. But in many ways, he did sort of epitomize the spirit of the age, so to speak. But then he is struck down with a brain tumor, and he goes into hibernation for many years and has revived in 2100, and then finds himself in this very different type of society, which is far more community rather than profit oriented. That's about how he had to adjust to this strange new world he finds himself in.
And so he's in this strange new world, and you can't tell us everything because I certainly want people to get the book 2100, which, by the way, you can get Robert's book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. But what do you tell us some of the stories of what is so odd to him when he wakes up, I guess is how I'll put it.
Well, firstly, there's the shock of adjusting and being in a new society. Main change, I think, is when he goes to live in a community of about 200 people. If you can say a street block of about a dozen houses, instead of turned into a community of a couple of hundred people. They've got their own small houses and a park, and they pull their resources to grow a lot of their food and so on. And so for him, the big surprise is that people aren't just going off doing their own thing. They're all working together. And he discovers there's a reason for that, in that from time to time, climate change does strike. At one stage, there's a severe dust storm sweeps in. Everybody has to pitch in and help covering up gardens and so on, and removing cutting down on a small windmill they've got and things like that. So there are reminders to him from time to time that climate change is still there and it's still having a severe effect. Another time there are heavy rains and a lot of places are flooded. Other things he does find, technology is an odd mixture. On the one hand, the tires and the cars are quite thin. It's difficult to get rubber. On the other hand, they've got devices like an emotional regulator. It's a small device like a hearing aid that's put behind your ear, and it can, to a degree, regulate your emotions to stop you from getting too depressed or agitated, which also helps him to adjust to society in this world. Another time he and his girlfriend that he meets get caught in a snowstorm in the Australian Alps. They have to take refuge in a ranger's hut, and then there's a number of home crews come out. So there are some dramatic incidents in it, but it's not meant to be a normal adventure novel. It's more about what life could be like living then.
Wow, so interesting. And again, 2100 is the name of the novel that Robert's written. What do you hope people take away from reading your book?
Well, firstly, it was going to entertain. I enjoyed reading it. Secondly, consider that there might be other ways we can live our lives. We may need to live them in future. We adapt to the effects of climate change and economic problems and so on. But we need to become more community-oriented. Now that you hear talk about these preppies, you know, people who are going and preparing for the apocalypse or whatever, they normally take themselves off to some remote spot. They won't be the survivors. The survivors will be the ones that organise themselves in the community. All their resources. And as I think at times and teach you what we might have to do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think you are predicting the future. I do. I don't want to give too much away, and I want to give you time to tell us just a little sneak about your next book. Tell us the name of the other book that you have out and a little bit about what that's about.
Oh, that's on Amazon also. Also set in Canberra's future, and it's called Canberra-esque. That's also in a sort of post-apocalyptic world. The apocalypse is when the bad thing happens, the post-apocalypse is when the survivors pick up the pieces. The interesting thing is what happens after that, when things start to improve and people from various communities start to link with each other. It's based in a camera setting where they've divided themselves up into lots of small communities, but now, two or three centuries in the future, they're starting to recombine and there are various power struggles. That novel was told in a rather, it's a comedy, told in a rather tongue and cheek fashion. But it also shows the benefit of the far-sighted legacy of one man who will help Canberra to recover and reestablish its preeminence.
Yeah.
That one's also on Amazon.
Wow.
Or with both books. You can go to my website on robertphillips.com.au and you can get links from there through to Amazon.
Excellent. Robert, thanks. So fascinating. I think you've hit on some themes that we're definitely talking about these days, and we appreciate you coming on the show on America Tonight.
Oh, I appreciate talking to you, Kate.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Steal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.